questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. In our last conversation, we spoke about the need for leaders to have a plan that outlines the actions necessary to realize a change. It's on the leader to know and assemble the list of those actions, and then be able to invoke others to complete them by acting in alignment until the change is real. But when it comes to action, change doesn't just rest on others to act. It relies on leaders to provide what those others need. And that's exactly what this Unify question is meant to reveal. Jonathan, please read the reference cards again.
Illumify. To illuminate the change that matters most to you. Amplify it, so it also matters to those who can help realize it. And unify, to align in thought and action as a collective to ignite meaningful change.
I think I heard emphasis on ignite. Did you hear that? Because we're at action now.
Guidelines. Number one, answer from your heart, not from your head. Two, listen to yourself with care and focused attention. Three, do not judge the validity or viability of your answers. This is about expressing significant new initiatives or ideas that do not yet exist.
Anything there?
Even no, it all feels... The interesting thing... As you ask the question now, is that I have no idea how many times I've read those cards.
Many times.
But I've never tired of reading them because...
Oh, that's good.
Because, well, it's very good language. It's important language. And you talk about emphasis. I think your mind, anybody reading those would... You're always looking for emphasis, I think, as you struggle to get through a piece of language, just a sentence, your eyes are looking for, I think naturally look for, what's the key word here? What's the big word? What do I need to make sure is heard? And all of those pieces of text, I think, have something important in them.
And at different stages of your journey.
Precisely.
And it's interesting because when we read... In this case, you're reading a card, guidelines, definition. But when we read anything, we have the opportunity to go back and reread a word, paragraph, a sentence. And also text allows us to underline, bold case, use larger font, italics. It allows us all of that, those tools of interpretation to emphasize what needs to be emphasized. When we speak words, it is our voice that has to do all of that. And when others are listening to us, our words are invisible. They're invisible to us, ideally, because we're not reading, certainly not in this case, but they're invisible to our listeners. So it is through our voices that we can put emphasis on which words should stand out. And always know that, again, as we're speaking, our listeners are translating for themselves. They're translating in real time what the words mean. And so one of the rhetorical techniques that the ancient Greeks, bless them, identified, developed, created, you could argue for any one of those, was... The use of the simple pause. So you've said something, you need to convey its significance, allow them few seconds to absorb it, and even a pause serves to bring them back if they've disengaged, because now there's empty air. Oop, what's going on? I better listen. But it can be a really powerful device when you are speaking as a leader about to ignite meaningful change. And when you are using words that, as you say, your declaration now has more weight. There's a lot tightly packed into it. But of course, as you start to speak about it, people are hearing it for the first time. So it's incumbent now on you to express those words, giving them the justifiable weight. And how do you do that with your voice? You don't say, for example, today we stand on new ground, or we break with the past and we stand on, and I've heard people do this to a powerful declaration. It kills me. So know that your voice is going to help them, first of all, hear and then interpret and understand those powerful words and the packaging behind them. Thank you. Please read the next Unify card.
What do they need from you as a leader to ignite this change? What do they need from you as a leader to ignite this change? Vision? Credible commitment? Certainty? Reassurance? Security? Understanding? Support? Guidance? Mentoring? Conviction? Willpower? Or...
dot, dot, dot. What do they need? Okay, actually, look at that question again.
Yes, please. I reread it for that okay. reason. I had not seen the italics on the first reading. So what do they need from
exactly.
you as a leader to ignite this change? I'm seeing some of the words here that we've rightly touched on in recent conversations, and we, as a team here, have used some of these words at different moments. Reassurance, I remember, was a very important part of one of our conversations. I think a couple of days ago, when we were really in the middle of Amplify, we had a good conversation about reassurance.
And, you know, as you're creating the unfamiliar together and you're asking them to leave what they know and move forward together.
Yes.
The reassurance.
Yes. And I think it was linked to the idea of listening. How there was an exchange within Amplify. There was a conversation going on there. It wasn't about somebody standing on their soapbox, as we say, and enunciating their vision and seeing how people react, but actually something much more intimate.
A dialogue
again, back around the kitchen table, and not just seeing and hearing, but feeling those first reactions from the other person, and knowing that at the moment they leave you and enter the other person, they are immediately changed already. It doesn't matter how carefully you've worked on your language. It is transformed at the moment of being heard. So that then led to a conversation about how different people will react in different ways because of their own cultural assumptions, their own personal history, their own view of the world, or just how they're feeling on that particular day. Mood. We all know mood is extremely important and can affect so much. So, and this led us to the discomfort, various forms of discomfort that your interlocutor may feel. Confusion, uncertainty, anxiety,
Cynicism.
Skepticism. Yeah. And this led us to the need for the leader in at this moment, at this moment of conversation with the first circle. That's where we were in Amplify, the first circle, where we're looking for the people who might help us. The need to reassure. So I'm coming to this word now on the card. What do they need? Reassurance. If only to say, I hear you. I as the person here today offering my vision, I hear you.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I know
yeah.
you. Yeah. Yes. Recognizing them is so vital.
I am you.
Ah, voila. Yeah. Relatability.
Yeah.
On that one level.
And what you've just said there, Brittany, takes me back to that mysterious, lovely and mysterious piece of language yesterday about how do you make your words theirs? How do your words become theirs? And I'm still sort of slightly transfixed and enchanted by that very simple piece of language, because it's what you're saying. It reminds me certainly what you've just said there, Brittany, takes me back to that. We're now at the point of breaking down divisions between people, whether that's around the kitchen table or among a wider audience. So yes, I hear you. I am you, and that's where the words have to be so. The words of the vision, how we communicate it, have to be so meaningful for the person who hears that they can take hold of them and say, yes, this is me. And that's when their words are yours, that they are one and the same.
And those two, three words, I am you, what do they do when you speak of the power of your declaration and the possibilities it creates? I am you. What does that do in terms of possibilities?
It creates unity. Mm. Yeah? We talked about unity yesterday.
Yeah.
And particularly the need for the energy that comes with unity at this moment of ignition,
yeah,
at the beginning.
And if they see, when you convey that, if they then view you as themselves, we are one, and they see you stepping up saying, we can do this.
Mm.
This can be done.
Mm.
We can do it.
Mm.
And you are like them.
Mm.
What does that do to mobilize? To give them,
yeah,
that belief that they can, they,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
can act.
Yeah, you've triggered something there, which feels very important. If I think of people who I have deeply, deeply admired in recent years, and where in some way or another they are showing a form of leadership in very different ways, and to show you how different that can be, I'm thinking of a singer, an artist, and the manager of a football team. Okay, and obviously the manager of a football team is a more obvious example of leadership. That's his.
Well,
or
maybe to you.
His that's his or her job, yeah?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's no mystery there.
Well, their job really is management. It's not leadership.
Mm,
but
okay.
Good ones.
I'm thinking of a particular person, isn't it?
Yes, you are, you see, but
yeah,
but that person,
yeah, no,
is,
I get you,
not
I,
your typical.
I get you. And also artist, what, does any artist, I can imagine most artists would cringe at the idea of, yeah, you know, being leaders.
No.
But the reason I say this is there is something about looking, and I think this is relevant to where we are in this conversation. If I think of my relationship to those people and what I get from them and why I admire them, I'm not looking for an instruction manual from these people. I'm not looking for a set of instructions. I haven't admired these people and loved these people, even though I've never met them. Yeah? I've stood close to them, but I've not met them. I've looked up at them. You know, I've literally looked up at these. As they stand on the stage. But what they embody, is so important, so powerful. They're not giving me a way to live. I don't desire to copy them. It's just there, what they represent, what they say, the values that they embody, the spirit that's running through them that you can sense there. Certainly in that moment, that's enough.
Well, in part, I would assume, because it registers with some similar part in you.
Yes, that's where I was coming, and it's back to Brittany's first expression of that. I am you, where you're not looking at the leader or the hero or the artist and nodding your head and thinking, okay, now I've got it. And then you look away saying, now I know what to do. Thank you. Yeah. You don't walk away from that person and say, thank you, now I know what to do. And it's all there in that relationship, in that exchange. It's all there.
And you know, in a lot of the work around leadership, I hear the word. There are even, I'm sure, books written on this and certainly businesses designed for this. They contrast the word leader with followers. And it is always, hit a false chord with me to hear the word followers. And I've always said, we are not sheep. So when you look at someone on the stage, you're, as you're saying so poignantly, it's, don't give me the instruction. I'm not just going to, it's, what is it? It's not that.
No, it's so much more.
Yeah.
It's real connection. Real connection.
Yeah.
And where you feel a deep sense of a deep closeness to this person. Even though you're not talking to them, they don't actually know who you are. There's something very powerful going on.
And in some cases, if you've had anything similar, you could go up to that individual. Mm. You've just heard them sing or speak and you feel that connection and you feel that there's a bond of sorts between you. Mm. And then you approach them, maybe to thank them. Mm. But it's often the case where suddenly they feel awkward towards you.
Mm.
It's almost like a false familiarity.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's the cliche, yeah, don't meet your heroes. I've met two of my greatest heroes and shaken their hand. And, you know, on my deathbed, I'm not going to be looking back at those moments. What I'm going to have in my head is the tunes that they sang.
Yeah.
I'll be listening to the music. I won't be wistfully looking back to that day when I shook their hand. And that's it. Tells you all you need to know.
It does.
I think in this conversation right now, and let's be clear, this is not about, you know, I remember saying in London, it is good and healthy to worship. And I say that today in February 2024, where even as we've had long conversations about religion and the need to borrow language. And if we're borrowing language, what are we borrowing? Ideas, yeah? So we're not just copy and pasting from the Bible. We're going a bit deeper than that, yeah? Even though I have done that and do it more and more in my life, I still don't consider myself to be a believer. And yet, I have this deep, deep, deep conviction that it is good and healthy to worship. And that's what we're doing.
So if that is the case for you, Jonathan, what do they need from you?
Yes, I have to laugh here. I have to laugh here. Again, it's one of the moments of absurdity. Let's be clear. I'm talking about my heroes, you know, up on the stage.
Okay, invert right, that, right, shall
yeah,
we?
No, we're not, no. Again, it's back to this idea of the power of the exchange, and it is an exchange. This is it. It's an exchange. And as you said, Marianne, quite rightly, this is not about following. This is not about following. There is a real exchange there. And I've heard one particular artist talk about this at length in a book of interviews. He gets this. He knows it's an exchange with his audience. Yeah?
Good for him.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Even in your case, Jonathan, remember we had the conversation about, certainly in Amplify, where it's incumbent on you to be able to make your meaningful change meaningful to them as well, right? Mm. And here we are in Unify, where to act on that. And remember we spoke about it's not a taking, it is giving them an opportunity to fulfill some part of themselves.
Exactly.
Exchange.
Yes, yes. It's exactly that. It's exactly that. Yes. A real sharing of something here.
Absolutely.
On a deep, deep level.
And that very lack of is why change fails.
Mm.
Yeah. Where there's not a fair exchange.
Mm. Mm.
And not an equal exchange.
Mm. Yeah.
Or fair.
Yeah, that
even
really rings
in hierarchical
true. Sure.
organizations.
Yeah. No, I hear you. That really makes sense. So if I look at the card here, that there are a number of words here on the card, which I think are being gathered up together into this idea that we're talking about now. Vision, obviously. Credible commitment.
Do you know what that means?
What I'm feeling from the conversation we've just had, if I'm sticking with the people that I've got in my head, and at this moment in time, there could be others, but for now, it's this particular artist and a particular football manager. For me, the credible commitment was visible over many occasions, not just at one moment, but over many occasions in how they appear, how they hold themselves, their response, their rapport and response to the people around them, the crowd, where you just know before they've said anything why they're there and how committed they are. You just know. There's not a moment of doubt. They don't need to demonstrate that subsequently with the quality of their work. You don't need to see the sweat afterwards. Maybe because you know the sweat's coming, yeah? You've seen the sweat before. They don't need to work for it. But it's not that they're getting it for free either. You just know. You know. You see and you have felt their commitment. And you're not sitting down politely clapping from your seat.
Right.
Oh, isn't
right.
that nice?
Right.
You're feeling it.
Yeah.
And the value of it and what that means to you.
Yeah. And as you say, you know it. So that is absolutely one form of what you could call credible commitment.
And where it's the beyond language, yeah, this is embodiment.
Right.
The actual physical
right.
appearance of the person.
That is different from my use of this term. So
okay.
Shall I
yeah,
elaborate?
Go for it.
We've talked about speech acts, how these brilliant linguistic philosophers from Oxford in the 1960s did this massive study of populations across countries, across any demographic, age, gender, or whatever, and determined that through their research that human beings, whenever we speak, use what are called speech acts, ACTS, and there are five of them. And we talked about, I think, briefly what they were, declarations being one of them. In Unify, by the way, we're getting into another two. We're getting into requests and offers. We have also, over the course of these conversations, spoken about a fourth. There's no hierarchy, by the way. It's not number one, number two, number three, but there are five. All are significant. We've We've talked about the fourth, which are called assertions. And assertions are things that can be proven true or false. They are facts. And most communication, particularly in organizations, is loaded with the facts. Fewer declarations, which are statements that cannot be proven true or false. You could liken them in some cases more to assessments. And we have focused in these conversations on one of the forms of declarations, visions. All visions are declarations. They don't exist. You can't prove they exist. They are assessments of sorts, but they are a means, a linguistic means of being able to express for leaders what they see could be. So we've got declarations, assertions, facts. We've got requests we make of people. We're all familiar with that. We've got offers. We'll get more into that in our upcoming conversations. And then the fifth, just to mention it, is we use expressives such as, thank you, I'm pleased to see you. That was a lousy report. Things that we say that ideally convey our sincerity. Expressives. Now, there was a man, I believe he still lives. His name is Fernando Flores. And he was a minister in Isabel Allende's government in Chile. And when Allende was, quote, overthrown, he was imprisoned. The Americans actually got him into prison, in effect, if you know that background. And yet when he was released from prison, somewhat ironically, he went to Berkeley in California. And he did further work on these speech acts. And he coined the term credible commitment. What he meant by that was he looked at language deeply, thoroughly. It is through language that we make commitments to each other. Do you see that?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. So we can say, let's meet for lunch next week. We can, of course, load our emails with commitments. The meeting is at 9 o'clock. Next Wednesday morning. Are you going to be there? Yes, I'll be there. Commitment. Of course, there are much bigger commitments like the one you are making to anyone willing to listen to you, that you are willing to act on your vision. Massive commitment. So what happens, though, when we make commitments, it is therefore essential that we recognize that at some level, through our making of a commitment, we are changing people's reality. Not their physical reality, their social reality. And I'll use a small example of that. You're walking down the street and you run into someone you haven't seen for a while, which seems very common these days, doesn't it, as we're all still emerging or re-emerging. And you say to, oh, it's so nice to see you. Let's get together for lunch. I'll get in touch. And you part ways. And you're busy. And you think, yeah, as soon as I have space, as soon as I'm back in town, I'll get in touch. Meanwhile, the person that you have said that to might return to their world, their office, their home, and say, oh, do you know who I saw today? So nice to see him. And we're going to have lunch. And they may even look at their calendar and think, okay, he's going to get in touch. When could I meet for lunch? They will at some level have an expectation of lunch. Then they don't hear from you. And then a few months later, you run into them again. And again, you say, oh, so nice to see you. I've been meaning to get in touch. Let's do lunch. You part ways again. What happens to trust here? Because you've already said you've committed to it, not a massive commitment, but you made a commitment and you didn't follow through. So trust between us erodes when our commitments are not fulfilled. Small and big. And trust is a very fragile and precious thing. When we erode trust, it can be impossible to rebuild it. We have to earn trust from others. So credible commitment, he actually had a whole model around it. And my partner, Morley Katz, uses this in his work in organizations, teaching people to make and fulfill commitments. There are times when we can't fulfill a commitment. Life happens. But incumbent on us in not fulfilling it is to go back to that person and say, I can't do it by next week. I can't meet you tomorrow for lunch. I need to reschedule. Let's find another date, right? You're negotiating your... That's rarely done. We just drop these commitments, maybe hoping, assuming they'll forget about it. Oh, we always have that opportunity down the road. No, we make commitments through language. And credible commitment is when we make and fulfill those commitments. Do it. We make commitments credibly because we fulfill them. I have a client, an executive client, who is assigned an HR person, human resource person, for her business unit. And my engagement with a client has now, she's completed the engagement. It takes about a year to complete what I call my Illumify for Executives experience, where they work one-on-one with me. They experience the diagnostic of their communication and the learning and the coaching and strategic counsel. So through that period of time, her HR person has been in touch with me. At one point, she wanted her whole leadership team to have a workshop by me, and it was incumbent on him to arrange it. At every single point in time, he has failed to fulfill a commitment he makes to me. And I'm a consultant, as they would view. But in the recent experience, it is about a piece of work she wanted for her leadership team members. And I have to keep saying to her, when do you want it? Do you still want it? Yes, I do. I'll speak to my HR person. Then I understand. I know her. She's spoken to him. Never hear from him. And I'm at the point where I'm done. I'm not following. I have more important things to do with my time than to chase someone down. Do I believe him when he says he will do something now? Absolutely not. I have no trust in him. Minor. That's a minor relationship. Insignificant, really. But think of that in the myriad of ways that we relate to people out there, and bring it back to you and your vision. What do they need from you? Incredible commitment. What do they need, Jonathan? What can you see there? Mm.
Those are great examples. Great examples. And great because they're familiar.
Can we all relate to them?
And they, what they all do as well is, you talked about trust and how trust is fragile. It also, there is also opportunity there, because when you do fulfill the commitment, then your language takes on new value. As a result, you know that your words will carry just a little bit more weight,
exactly,
in the future, because people know. Mm-hmm.
And when you ask them something, ask them to do something to help contribute to igniting a change, you're going to go back and having been perceived as acting on what you may have already promised them and taking action yourself, credible, concrete action yourself to ignite the change.
Yeah.
You can go back. And here you've raised actually an opening, you created an opening for some other distinction here. I've had this experience, particularly with executive women, which is interesting to me from a gender perspective. So I tell my clients, make sure you convey to your people, your clients, your employees, that you have fulfilled a commitment you've made to them. First of all, make commitments. Please make commitments, but also make sure they know you fulfilled it. For a whole bunch of reasons, build trust, but also model for them that together you each fulfill your commitments. And I've had executive women over the years say to me, oh, but that would be bragging. No, that's not bragging. It is absolutely not bragging. If you say you're going to do something, they will, unless they're standing beside you, they won't see that you've done it. Make sure they know it through your language. Mm-hmm. Last week I met with so-and-so. You know, it's simply done. Matter of minutes. But make sure. So again, in your case, Jonathan, as you expound your vision and as you iterate it over many opportunities with different people, but also with the same people, moving them and you along that continuum of change, make sure they know that you are constantly and continually demonstrating credible commitment.
Yeah, it's a great point. And as you said, it is expressed through language.
It's the only way. Now, unless they see you walking your talk,
yeah.
And even then, so if you only use language to express it, say, I'm going to do something, and they don't see that you've done it, then trust erodes, right? And maybe you haven't done it. But if you rely on them, because I've had this too, I've had clients say, well, I did it. Why don't they see that I did it? Okay, language, action go together in all of this. But I've also had clients say, should I have to tell them I did it? I'm just acting. I'm constantly doing. Don't they see that? Well, even if they see you doing, if they don't have the context, the words around the doing, they can misinterpret the action. So it's the words that give context to the action and the action that makes the words credible. Mm.
I'm being pulled to revisit the vision for a moment because there's a lot of things that are really tying in here. So it's coming back to the idea of integrity.
Yep.
Are you following through with your word, with what
integrity.
You say you're going to do?
Yeah.
And I'm also interpreting this credible commitment as almost an invisible contract. The words that we speak create these contracts. And we know in the real world, when contracts are unfulfilled, there are consequences to that. And in this case, perhaps the consequence, as you mentioned, is broken trust. But there is weight to that. There is a weight to an unfulfilled or a broken contract.
Yeah.
And because this integrity and this truth ties so heavily into your vision, this is a way for you to really embody that vision, not with declarations, but as a part of who you are and how you show up. Such an important piece.
Beautiful. I love that you've taken that to contracts too. That because contracts are meant to bind us to a mutual agreement. And yet because our words, whether spoken or written, we use many of them in the course of just one day. Yeah. So invisible contracts. Beautifully put.
And I really appreciate what you said about if you know you can't fulfill, you go and you renegotiate.
Absolutely.
You follow up. You follow through. You don't just let it hang invisibly and get let down without communicating that.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So what else, Jonathan? What else do they need from you?
Yeah, back to the card. There is no neat category that these words fall into. But I am seeing a pattern, nonetheless. There seem to be some things here that the leader just has to give. I think the leader has to bring the vision, the conviction that goes with that. I think the two have to go hand in hand. A vision that doesn't have conviction is not a vision. So there has to be the conviction that comes with the vision. Willpower.
Willpower. Oof. Changing requires an inexhaustible amount of willpower.
Yes. Yep. And I would
How do you demonstrate that?
Well, that's a good question. If I go back to the two great heroes that I was thinking about a few moments ago, again, what do I know? I see in their body language, as well as the things that they've actually said, their truth and their integrity. I've witnessed that. I've seen that. I've felt it. And I think part of that is there is also an understanding or an assumption or just a knowledge within me that they have had to go through a lot to get to where we are today. That's context. If it's an artist that you love and admire and worship, then you know the backstory. You know the difficult journey. Many artists' journey is necessarily difficult. That's part of the ancient history of the artist, the struggle. Yeah, the struggle. If we're talking now about what a leader consciously needs to be aware of, there may be, and this again, we're back down to tactics a little bit, but I do think it speaks to a wider point, that the leader is able to express that something has gone into this vision, which isn't just hard work at a desk or research or conversation or physically building something, if it's a a vision that takes a physical form. The opposite being the visionary who turns up and we have a sense that it's something that's popped into her head or his head 5 minutes ago and sounds great, but we don't really believe that much time or effort has gone into it.
Yeah. So, and this is why you answered so many questions in Illuminate, to first shine a light on it for yourself, what it was, and then to emerge from all of that digging and excavating clear for you, because it is evident to others when you haven't done that, when someone is espousing some, even a vision could be perceived as like a trend, a fad. Oh, I just thought of it. You know, there are levels of insight, for example, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
so absolutely. You're right in that. Absolutely. It has to have that conviction and strength tenacity and all of it behind.
So there's a group of words there about what the leader just has to bring. And then we have some other words which speak more to the exchange, I think, between the leader and the audience, no matter how large the audience. It can be a one-to-one conversation. And here I'm looking at, we talked about reassurance, understanding, where the leader is listening more than anything. Listening. And that reassurance is close to the idea of support in the moral and spiritual sense. That there will be a more, I'm sure, more practical forms of support that we'll come back to later in the process.
Tangible,
yeah. But for now, I'm hooked by the moral and spiritual sense of support, reassurance, understanding. And then there's a very interesting couple here, guidance and mentoring. This is really interesting because, again, I talked about heroes who don't give you a prescription, don't give you a way of life, don't give you a manual or an instruction book.
A playbook.
Because there's so much more in what they're doing on stage that is enough for you and that gives you what you need. And which is so inspiring that I'm not saying it doesn't shape your behavior, it does, but it's not in the same way as a teacher, where you go away and do your homework.
Right.
It's not the same. Yep. It's not the same. It's not the same. And mentoring is interesting because I can think back to two people who were extremely important in my professional life. in Brussels. One of those people is still very much in my life as a close friend. And the first person was very much a mentor because he passed on skills, a way of seeing the discipline of communication that allowed me to find a really rewarding professional life. And he opened so many doors in my mind. Yeah.
In your mind.
In my mind. Yeah.
Possibilities.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Where.
And what about in your heart, Jonathan?
As well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Very much so. We had a wonderful relationship. It was a very, very, very close relationship. I've always felt that it's a good and healthy thing if a professional relationship goes beyond. Nothing wrong with that at all, as long as people are aware of the boundaries and what's going on. If it's not done blindly, it's a very natural and normal thing that we make not just friends, but good close friends, and sometimes spouses, as we know, through work. It's all good. It's all good. So he was very much a mentor. And if I was asked to describe a mentor, I would go to him. Beginning of the career, opening up these doors in my mind and my heart, showing what was possible, showing me the skills, looking over my shoulder. Yeah, that's the thing. Looking over my shoulder and saying, wow, you know, Jonathan, that's really good. But you could have done this better. So difficult conversations as well. I can remember brief but very cold showers. Not real physical ones, yeah, let me be clear.
Metaphorical.
You know what I'm saying here, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember those as well. All good. And the real work of a mentor. And I'm so... I have a tinge of regret now because I don't think I've fully expressed to that person over the years.
I was
going to
say, how fortunate were you?
Yeah, really.
Not everybody gets a mentor.
Really, really fortunate. So I'm deeply, deeply grateful. I think he does know... But I
you should tell him.
Yeah, maybe a bit
Mr.
more.
Mr. Wordsmith.
Yeah. Okay. And then the second person has also played and continues. So this is the person that I'm still very much in touch with, who's in my close circle of friends and very much somebody who I look up to, even though he's not that much older than I am. But I feel that he gives... ancient wisdom to
lovely.
Me.
Ancient wisdom.
Mm, that he carries that. But, and here's the interesting thing, he's not a mentor. And I'm still figuring out what the difference is. Mm-hmm. And the most obvious one is that this second person wasn't looking over my shoulder because we never actually worked together. There wasn't a professional relationship between us. So he wasn't looking over my shoulder, commenting on my work or... And I remember giving him a gift of thanks about a year ago, where I was writing a very important message on the inside of a book. And I can't remember now, but I'm fairly sure that I didn't use the word mentor because it was something else. It was something bigger. And I couldn't find a word for it.
Ah, you couldn't find a word for it?
No.
Bigger in what way? Could you find a word now?
Well, mentor, if we go back to mentor for a second, there's, as we've felt in the conversation that we had, deep value and importance, lasting importance. You know, we're not downgrading mentor in any way here. The mentor I was thinking about in my professional life had a huge and lasting impact on my life, and a really important one. The influence of this other person is something else. And I'm going to look to turn to Brittany for a second, and I'm wondering if it isn't somebody who has inspired me, perhaps.
When you first began sharing this story, the word guide came to me, and I couldn't decide if mentor was bigger than guide, but... I know in my personal life, I've had some very significant guides, and I've evolved to a greater degree through their guidance than certain mentors I've had in perhaps a more professional context.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that leads to the idea of a spiritual guide as one example of that.
And also maybe perhaps what they're guiding you to, right? Perhaps it's a guiding you back to yourself, back to home.
Back to your true path.
That makes it bigger.
Mm. Yeah, I like that word very much, guide. Mm. Yep.
Sometimes there's a need for new language. Newton, when he discovered gravity, had to invent new language. So there may be a word. I'm sensing there is another word here, Jonathan. Mm. I think guide captures a big part of it, a mentor. But I think there's something beyond that.
There is something beyond that. So all of these things are where there is an exchange between the leader and the interlocutor, whether that's just one-on-one over a coffee or in a small room. And so these words are reassurance, understanding, support, guidance.
Conviction you brought forward to what into vision alongside
yes.
vision to what the leader needs to bring, but could conviction also be what you provide them?
Yes. I think that has to be there. We're not entrepreneurs here saying, whew, let's give it a shot, yeah? What have we got to lose? I mean, I'm sure, I've never done this before, I'm not an entrepreneur, I'm sure entrepreneurs don't say that in the bank, you know. Hey, come on, let's give it a shot.
Some definitely do.
What have we got to lose? Come on, let's do it. maybe that's the best pitch.
But as an entrepreneur for the past several decades at this point, I remember a business advisor I engaged early on with my first business, which was called Media Sage, which was about teaching people to engage with media effectively. It was really about you open a business and I had with that business a sense of something. My business turned into something very different very quickly. My sense was, as I was launching with view to somehow, and why I even thought this, I thought, I don't want to be, at the time I'd been a VP in a PR agency, I can't reconcile those 80-hour weeks with having a young child. So, I know, I'll start my own business. What was I thinking? However, I put my stake in the ground, my stake in forming the business was, I'm going to do this. At the time it started with, I had in the agency, in part, taken all the new clients through media preparation, put them in front of cameras, et cetera. So that lent itself to 9 to 5, young child. And so that's what I did. I put my stake in the ground. At the time, nobody was actually in Canada marketing media readiness. Media preparation. Now there are millions of them, seemingly. So I'd be out at 5. That's what I'm going to do. And I did that pretty quickly, but very quickly, I had others who knew me coming to me for strategic counsel. And my business evolved from media readiness to crisis communication counsel. And that's where I spent the next 7 years, 24/7. Many times, but nevertheless. So you put your stake in the ground and you say, this is what I want to do, and this is what the market needs as an entrepreneur. How does that relate to you?
Well, I think in these early moments, the launch here, let's call it a launch for want of a better word, the leader has to find ways through language, but whatever else is available that is legitimate, body language, as you said, Brittany, showing up. Yeah? It's the very important idea of showing up. And not just once, but again and again. The credible commitment.
Consistently.
And then, as you were saying, Marianne, the credible commitment carried by your language. the leader here has to transmit something that the other person can take with them and keep, something that they can keep. And it's I think, I'm going to look back at the card, I think the word, yeah, certainty is on there as well. I don't think it would be, well, let's not make any assumptions at all. I have a preference here. They're different words, and if they're different words, they're there for a good reason. There is a good reason why we have different words. I'm drawn to the word conviction, because it has depth to it. It suggests the work that has gone in before. Mm. Here, certainty feels just a little bit brittle. What we're not saying to the other person or the group is, don't worry about this. It all adds up, I promise. I've done the math myself. I've done it. It all works up. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because then what if there are people in the audience who say, well, actually, I quite like thinking about it and worrying about it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't want to just take it at face value. It's just the way I am. I'm going to go home and I'm going to sit on this a little bit. So what do you need to give them then?
Exactly.
It's the conviction that is, I know why we need to do this. I know why we need to do this. This is vital. It's urgent. I know that. Do I know that this vision works really hard to answer some vital questions? Yes, I know that. Do I know that this vision is there for you? And you? Yes. Can I guarantee you today it's going to bring everything that we want in X days, X months, X years? Can I guarantee? No. No. Does that mean I don't have conviction? No. It means I can't predict the future.
Well, and it means you also can't make them a promise.
Right.
And that gets back to credible commitment.
Exactly. So I think what they need to feel at this stage here is the conviction that you as the leader are fully, fully invested with every cell of your body in the vision.
Absolutely. I don't want to dismiss certainty, though, yet.
No. Right? It was a marginal preference.
Yes, got it. Okay. Because certainty, I'm going back to, Jean, what you observed and shared with respect to Jonathan's saying that the declaration has more weight, and you use the word, you're not wavering. And it's really important that they don't see wavering in you, that you convey, as you've just said, Jonathan, that you're certain about the vision. And I also want to highlight here, this is really important, that this is about them, as the word they indicates, but it's about them at that moment in time. Mm. So you've got a list here. You could add to the list, what do they need? Well, today they need this. Tomorrow you speak again or convene again in some way. And now they've moved. We're not static. So whatever they heard that transformed whatever they needed, awareness, understanding, et cetera, at that moment in time, now they're in a different place. What do they need now? And of course, this is always in the context of life, the world, and back to media readiness, it was always about what is newsworthy. So we don't operate in silos in this world. And we have lots of influences on us, whether we like them or not. What is happening around us has a bearing on us. The world can change in an instant. Look how it did a number of years ago. So it's always about, what do they need from you at that moment in time? And it's ever changing.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a very good way of looking at the card as a whole. The answer to the question is we need all of these things.
Yeah.
But at particular moments.
And more other
and
things.
And more, there'll be, it's not an exhaustive
the
list.
Or dot, dot, dot.
There right. will be other things. But yeah. they are, each of them are there for a very, very particular reason. And as we said during the conversation, some of them, the leader just has to demonstrate and show.
Yeah.
On that stage, at the front of the room, sitting on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
They just have to be there.
Yeah.
Others are sit more within the exchange between the leader and his listener, whether that's one person or a small room or a big room. And those were the words of understanding, reassurance. Yes, a leader can exude those. A leader can instinctively feel that he needs to show that and exude them anyway, mm-hmm. in the words he chooses, in his body language, sure. But I do think it's if they are true and full of integrity, then it's part of the listening.
It is, and that's why amplify is so critical.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you could, in every instance, demonstrate all of that to that group of people. But it is about, as I hope you know from Amplify, mm. knowing where they're at, because it has to be, what you say has to be, has to fall at the intersection of, yes, what matters to you and what matters to them mm. right then.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's the knowingness that you need to surface. And not just assume and not be a generic version of. And I think this is a good opportunity to highlight the paradox in the concept of leader, the word leader in itself, which is, I'm sure you've heard me say through these conversations, my pet peeve is that the word leader has transplanted the word manager. And now everybody's a leader every day in every way. Absolutely not. And why would we want to be? That would be horrible. Leaders are those who challenge the status quo in a meaningful way, meaningfully challenge the status quo. Managers maintain the status quo, which in itself can be invaluable when the status quo is serving and should be preserved. Leaders either challenge it when it shouldn't be preserved because they see something better, or they preserve it when they have to resist challenge. So they lead by resisting challenges mm. to the status quo when it should be preserved, like mm. a Churchill did mm. with the British sovereignty. So here's the paradox. Brittany's words, powerful words of I am, so true. So that being able to convey that you and they are one, I am you, absolutely. However, you are also paradoxically, this is your vision and it is your responsibility to get your vision out and then to protect and preserve it, then to generate the conversations with others needed to start to realize that vision, because it's something you need to do collectively with others. But and then it's your responsibility so to generate the right conversations and to manage them impeccably and to invoke the actions, all of that. There's so much to leadership. So where people believe that initiatives do not, change initiatives do not need a leader, I am here to assert and declare that initiatives need a leader. And I could point to many that have failed because of either a failure in the leader, an abdication and ineffectiveness, mm-hmm. but also because people have negated the need for a leader. We are one. For example, in recent history, the Occupy Wall Street initiative, where they declared, they were rallying against, and rightfully against, the failure of Wall Street, and said as a response, we don't want these individuals running us. True, absolutely, had huge merit. But the response they did was the inverse. Nobody's running us. We're all running together. What happened to that movement that had merit? There was no leader. So the question on this card, Jonathan, can you ask it again and emphasize particular words that you know have to be emphasized?
What do they need from you? What do they need from you as a leader to ignite this change?
That's it. Which words did you just emphasize?
They.
Yep.
Leader.
Yep.
Ignite.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now answer it in summary, please.
In summary, it's all of the words on this card, which are all great words, and I'm gonna read through them again because they're great words. Vision, credible commitment, certainty, reassurance, security, understanding, support, guidance, mentoring, conviction, willpower, all of them, and more. There is the awe and dot, dot, dot at the end. More, this is clearly not an exhaustive list. But what I found very helpful in that conversation is that we need all of these things at particular moments and for very particular reasons. These are not words that are sort of wishy-washy manifestations of leadership, types of behavior. No, that each of them is here for a very, very specific reason. Very specific reason. And I, just for the sake of to bring some clarity into my own mind, I saw a very soft pattern between some of these words being very much about what the leader has to bring to the table. The vision and the conviction that goes with that, the certainty that goes with that. And then there were other words which were more in the space, sitting in the space between the leader and the listener, and which can only happen if the leader is open. Can only happen if the leader is open and listening, that the leader can only provide reassurance if she or he is open.
And responsive.
And responsive.
Yeah. Yeah. And there the irony is, it's about evoking and invoking the response that will drive your change forward. And so the response being from them, and yet it is you as the leader who has to be equally, maybe even more responsive at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the same way that if you look at mentoring and guidance, an extremely vital contribution from the leader, but where there's an exchange again. That only works as an exchange. In mentoring and guiding, the leader doesn't hand something over and then walk away.
Exactly. That's abdication.
Yeah.
And that is the perfect place for me to say one last thing on this card. Because you have used the word worship even in this very conversation, I'm going to invoke this. Can you imagine, can you envision a chalice, a golden chalice? Do you know what that looks like?
Yes.
Can you describe it?
It's, to my mind, because of the word, a medieval artifact.
Stems from...
Very simple bowl, possibly with a stem underneath, but certainly a simple bowl that holds a liquid of some sort, some potion or drink. Yes.
We're not necessarily putting it in the context of an alchemist, for example, are we?
No, not necessarily. I mean, there is in my own imagination some religious connotation.
Okay, so yeah. Let's go with that just for now. So if you envision a golden chalice, and that chalice represents your vision, it is your role as the visionary to preserve and protect that precious chalice. And what you put in it will help you do that. And who gets to hold it with you? How's that for a vision?
Mm.
Or a metaphor?
Mm. There's a lot going on there.
Yes, there is.
There really is. Not least a sense of fragility.
Okay.
That there's a sort of an impish English humor here. You know, can we put a lid on it? Wouldn't Tupperware be better, Marianne?
Ah, now we've gone down to the mundane. I love it. Well, your vision is not mundane. It is practical, but not, yes. It's worthy of the gold, is it not?
Well, let's stick with the beginnings of this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, is this an image you've used before that you...
Never before.
Okay, so it's come from the conversation we've had. No, well, let's stick with that, yes. The fragility of, you know, something sacred, that's been important. And if we go back to the worship of heroes, there is something sacred going on.
Sacred dignity, Jonathan, your words.
Yes, yes.
Sacred keeps coming up.
Mm.
Sacred right to freedom.
The things that are not earned or don't need to be earned are things that we just have.
Not violated.
Yes. Yeah. As a human being born into this world. There's also something, I'm just throwing it in now, it's not a word we've used at all, but it's I think it's one of the, I think it's somewhere in the palette of colours of the vision, I think. And I'm saying this, I think, because the artist that I was thinking of, and yes, it's Nick Cave, for those who have perhaps heard earlier conversations. In his music, you sense a deep desire of his to re-enchant the world. You sense his sorrow at a world that has been drained of colour and meaning. If I were given the opportunity to spend just 5 minutes thinking about at some point you're going to think about the colours of the walls in the shared home, aren't you? You can have that conversation.
Yeah, you're gonna get, sure. The Benjamin Moore on the walls.
There you go. I would want somewhere in the colour scheme this idea of re-enchantment. Oh. Yeah, re-enchanting our world. I think it's deeply necessary. And this is much more than an aesthetic concern. It actually goes to the heart of the vision. And back to your word, Marianne, the chalice, the idea of a chalice. It comes from an enchanted world. It's mysterious. It holds something and is fragile, which led to the silly joke of mine. But that, because it is fragile and it holds a liquid, and the liquid might escape. And what if there are many hands reaching out for the chalice and it spills?
Could be dented.
Precisely. Damaged, so there's great fragility there. And I like that. I like that, actually.
And yet, back to the Luddites, perhaps.
Yes, go there.
Who made the chalice? How was the chalice made? Off a factory floor?
No, it's unique. It's unique.
Made by hand.
Made by hand. Yes, each one made by hand. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's precious.
Yes, very precious.
And what's inside of it is also very precious.
Indeed, yeah. Yep.
I'm really intrigued that you went to enchantment and the need to re-enchant the world. And you've likened it to the mysteriousness. Mm. Is there more you can share on enchantment and re-enchantment? Or is it just brewing now?
No, I think it's in deep, deep, deep within the vision.
Shall I read the definition?
Yeah, do.
Enchantment.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brittany. Noun, a feeling of great liking for something wonderful and unusual. A psychological state induced by a magical incantation or a magical spell. I would go to the synonyms on this, perhaps.
Mm.
Enchantment, captivation, enthrallment, fascination. Ah, but it's from the old French. We go to the etymology of the word as we used to do in London. This comes from the old French, to charm, a chant, to sing. It comes from cantare. Ah, here we are. Delighted. Any of that?
Yeah. The link to song is not
not a
without
coincidence.
Without meaning. Yeah, significance.
And where does even enchantment itself, let alone re-enchantment, how does that link perhaps to engaging them, keeping them engaged?
There is something here about what's at stake. I would want people to feel that it's not the high stakes that induce anxiety. Right, we've got this vision. We've got 2 weeks to do it. Otherwise, we're done. So, you know, not that sort of stakes. There are times when you have, we all know deadlines, yeah. This vision has to give itself more time, not because it's lazy and contemplative, but because of its vastness and its scale. Okay. But stakes are high because of what we've lost. A lot of the vision came in those early conversations about from a sense of loss. Yeah. What we've lost. And that part of the vision, which I think I've owned up to this from the beginning, that there is a part of this vision which even as it breaks with the past and even as it stands on new ground, might be about restoring and repairing things. Yeah, remember we had that very good conversation in London.
Yeah,
and how language, how words can repair and restore, we can heal through language. That takes me to chalice, actually. The idea of healing takes me to chalice. Yeah.
How do you get
well,
there?
Well, I guess the opposite. What's the opposite of a poisoned chalice? A chalice that's full of healing, I guess.
Interesting. Okay.
But this broader idea of enchantment, I feel over a certain period, I don't want to put a time on it, but I do feel we have, in the West, Europe, North America, I think we have drained a lot of colour and meaning and mystery from our life. I really do. It feels a sort of big and vague thing to say, but I feel it to my core. I really do. I wanted to play Nick Cave for you yesterday over lunch.
I didn't get that. I
can't
for
possibly
Nick
do
Cave.
This. It's way, way too intense for lunchtime. I can't.
Oh, is that
look, we're
going
to have to find
you
the right moment.
You didn't want to spoil our appetites?
Oh, it would. Well, it's just way too
heavy.
We couldn't fit it in the room. Yeah,
okay.
Not at lunchtime.
Not at lunchtime. Okay. It is a big room.
Two in the morning, candlelight, glass of whiskey. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Then I'd dare to put it on. But there is this absolutely brilliant line. Yeah, let me read it.
Please.
Me just read it,
yeah.
because it's such an important line, and it goes to the heart of this.
Could that be a coincidence, by the way, that Nick Cave has struck you so deeply, and now you can pull a line of his and apply it within the context of your vision?
That inspire us.
So for the... I'm covering you here, Marianne, for copyright issues. So,
oh, good.
So we, you know, so that there's no risk.
Yes, thank you for that.
So this is being read from the song by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, which is called Bright Horses. Possibly the most beautiful song he's ever written. And it's a very simple lyric, and it says, "And everyone has a heart, and it's calling for something. And we're all so sick and tired of seeing things as they are. Yeah? We're all so sick and tired of seeing things as they are. This is it. We don't want to see things as they are. Does that mean we want to turn away and hide? No, it's not saying that. Is it saying we want relief and escape? No, it's not saying that. It's let us turn to the mystery of the world around us.
And possibilities.
And possibilities, yes, of the imagination.
The wonder.
The wonder, absolutely, yes. Yes, absolutely. Mm. And that's a word that he would use and has used, the wonder. I remember David Bowie being interviewed, you know, that he was still at a late age, and I think as he was moving towards illness, he would still wake up to the wonder of being alive. And I thought, what a great feeling to have.
Which children come into this world with, don't they? The simplest things instill wonder. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're all so sick and tired of seeing things as they are. It's not a call to hide or look away or avoid the difficult things.
Or to continually recreate what is. Mm. The grayness that you talked about.
Mm.
We're all so tired. Wonder, enchantment, all fit into that. Encircle, perhaps, your chalice. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
We spoke about a lot in this conversation, from language, credible commitment and trust, to music, art, and writing. Jonathan's passion for music and musicians like Nick Cage is particularly strong, harboring at times on hero worship. And that's fine. But unless musicians are meaningfully challenging the status quo, they aren't leaders. Nor do they likely want to be. Often all they ask of others is to listen and support their art. Leaders have to do much more to ignite meaningful change. Change can provoke resistance for a lot of different reasons. So it's critical that leaders address what could impede others from acting to realize that change. This question posed a list of possibilities like reassurance, certainty, understanding, and guidance. But the one that is often missed is to reveal the credible commitment that confirms to others that the leader is doing their own part to achieve the change by walking the talk. Knowing that leader is truly committed to the change through their own actions, big or small, whether seen or not, builds trust. And that is invaluable to those who are being asked to step away from what they know to achieve the unknown and, as yet, unproven. The leader's journey continues. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the Leader's Journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.